Yes, the beach at Broadstairs yesterday with my family certainly felt like that. August from Tchaikovsky's The Seasons. BBC Radio 3, just gone 3 o'clock, time now for World Roots, and it's the second of two programmes recorded 2 years ago at a music festival in Morocco. Lucy Duran introduces highlights from the 2009 Gnawa and World Music Festival in Essaouira on Morocco's Atlantic coast.
It's a lovely warm afternoon here in Essaouira, and the streets are teeming with festival goers waiting for the music to kick off on the many festival stages around town. Meanwhile, I'm enjoying the sounds blaring out from the shop just in front of me, set in an archway through an old stone wall that runs the length of this palm tree-lined avenue. Right now they're playing what you might call Gnawa fusion. The Gnawa are the religious Muslim brotherhoods whose trance-like and bluesy rhythms have attracted musicians from around the world to Essaouira. Today, in the second of two programmes from the festival, we're going to hear two Gnawa fusion groups, the rising stars of the town who call themselves Blue Mogador and Nas El Giwan, the group who pioneered back in the 1970s the use of local traditions like Gnawa in popular music. But we start with the roots of it all, with music by a master Gnawa musician, or a malem, who's collaborated with Led Zeppelin, amongst others. The singer and player of the three-string lute, the Gimri, Malim Brahim El Belkani. Here he is, on a stage just outside the walls of Essaouira at the Bab Dukala.
الخمامي سيدي الخمامي هاكا خلاني في حاله ولا ينخلى ولا ينخلى مجريده في باب تكالا
الخمامي
سيدي الخمامي
هاكا
والعازي في حاله
وما
الى في مولا مليانه هاكا خلاني في حاله بابا سيدي بابا سيدي وهاكا والعاطي مولانا
بابا الغناوي سيدي الغناوي هاكا والعاطي مولانا ما الى الغنا وما الى الغنا مجردا في مولا مولانا
بابا الخمامي
سيدي
الخمامي الحيك في لالي هاكا والعاطي مولانا يا ولا ينخلا مجردا في مولا مليا
I'm gonna
هذيك لاله ميمونه ايه هذيك خيتي وخيتي وهذيك خيتي ميمونه ايه والحاجه ميمونه الحاجه ميمونه ايه وهذيك لاله ميمونه وهذيك حاجه ميمونه ايه هذيك لاله ميمونه فرحي بحاجه ميمونه لا لا ميمونة نا نا ميمونة يا الحجة يا نادي حجة ميمونة أسعديب لا لا ميمونة فرحي بحجة ميمونة لا القناوية يا لا لا ميمونة هذيك خيتي ميمونة حزاوة 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 مرحبا بسي هادي يا حسام ايو بركاتي ولاد السودا ايو بركاتي هادي يا حسام هادي يا حسام
شكرا اشكرك لكم.
The word Ganawa comes from an Arabic term meaning black, the same root as the name Guinea. It's believed that the Ganawa were brought as slaves from across the Sahara to Morocco, probably from Mali, and their sub-Saharan origins are very clear in their music. The driving rhythms are provided by giant metal castanets called karab karab, an onomatopoeic word for noisy. And the gimri belongs to a family of ancient lutes that are found across West Africa. Brahim El Belkani is not just a player of the gimri, but he makes them as well.
هو الأصل ديال هاد السنتير الأصل ديالو كان من
The origin of this instrument goes back centuries. First, farmers used to put strings on gourds. They would simply take all the insides out and attach the strings. And some people even used the shells of turtles. Then they started to make the instruments out of wood. And it's wood that's used for the belly of the gimbri. Like our elders say, the gimbri is a noble instrument and a symbol. Back then, Sufism had nothing to do with frenzied dances and the rest of it. They used it to express their thoughts and reflect on life, on nature around them, and to speak the truth.
Okay, the strings of this instrument, what are they made from, Malem?
The strings are made from the guts of goats. And the skin that forms the sound table of the gimbri, that's camel skin. It comes from the neck of the camel. I am also an instrument maker, you know, and I have always made my own gimbris, taking wood straight from trees, using camel skin, and I make my own strings too. And when I am doing a special concert, I have the instrument decorated with henna, like this one here, and a friend does that for me.
So your music, Malem, is sacred music. It's music that you normally would play in the Zawiya, the house of the Ganawa. Is that right?
Yes. Ganawa music is religious music for the Zawiya. But I also perform it for small gatherings of family and friends. And my children learn the Ganawa traditions this way. In our music, we sing about the prophets of old and about the messengers of the sacred word. We remember what they did and what lessons we can learn from their lives.
And what about the spirits?
Spiritual songs are for certain times of the year, such as the lunar month of Sha'ban, just before Ramadan. We organize lilas, gatherings at night, where we invoke the spirits. It depends on which spirits the people at the lilas want us to invoke. Different spirits are attracted by different music, and we play the kind of music that attracts the spirits people have asked for. And people who take part at these lilas become inhabited by the spirits. Lilas are like parties, really. We sacrifice an animal, we cook the meat, and everyone is happy.
How is it then when you're playing, for example, at this festival at Essaouira, when you're on stage and you're not in a sacred context and you have a general audience out there, how does that feel to play this sacred music in that kind of a situation?
This spiritual dimension to our music, this special spiritual gift, it's always in our soul. So wherever we are, even in big arenas, we will still have it. And we transmit it to people. It's not just music for the ear. It really is music for the soul. We give them blessings from God. You know, people need to know their own roots, their own soul. And this music talks to the souls of people here in Morocco. It's music that makes Moroccans feel at peace with themselves.
And I understand that you've played many years ago with Led Zeppelin.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Well, yes, that all happened because a music manager I knew came in contact with Led Zeppelin. This was in the 1990s, and they were touring in Egypt and India, and they wanted to come to Morocco too to perform with local musicians. They asked my friend, and he recommended me, so that's how it happened. But I've also played with Randy Weston from America and singers from Mali and Niger, and I've played with that Big Muallim from India, Ravi Shankar. But this is not about being proud of having shared a stage with world-famous musicians. What's important is that it shows that Gnawa music is not just for us. It speaks all languages. It goes to the hearts of people everywhere, whatever their origin is. It's a universal music.
Yalla,
ارجع لصويره ويلا تيفون الله كل قدم بفقير يا خويا
الله الله يا الله
كريم الله
يا الله شفيات الله لا
عيشة
ولا
لا عيشة عيشة ولا لا عيشة من دون الناس واحد في ملك وهالي لا بعيد حساس لا يا ربي مالي مالي من دون الناس واحد في ملك وهالي وانا بعيد حساس ولا يدريس الوالي سيدي وعمار تفاس لا يدريس الوالي سيدي وعمار تفاس لا يا ربي مالي مالي من دون الناس واحد في ملك وهالي بعيد حساس
I'm here with a very special person. His name is André Azoulay, and he is the advisor to the King of Morocco. And you have a very special relationship with this festival, with the festival of Essaouira, and partly because you come from this town.
It's originally my hometown, yeah. I was born here. And I mean, we are trying to do our best to revive the city and to try to give her a chance to develop and to, you know, come back to the national agenda, because I mean this city was suffering a deep and a long crisis 20 years ago, 25 years ago, and I remember when I was appointed by His Majesty. In fact, I was in Paris at that time as investment banker. I was investment banker in Paris for 25 years. So His Majesty, the late King Hassan II, called me, and I was appointed as his advisor. And I said maybe it was the opportunity to try also to resist this deep and long decline of the city.
Why was the city in decline? This beautiful town, why should it have been in decline?
Yeah, like many cities who are, you know, forged or nursed by history. We are not a newcomer in Essaouira. It's an old city. The Phoenicians were there. I feel myself, your listeners will be surprised, I'm more than 3,000 years old as a Moroccan Jew and Arab Jew born in this city. And the Jews, I mean, arrived in Morocco a long time before Islam, more than 1,500 years before Islam. So Essaouira and what was an emblematic city, especially regarding relations between Muslims and Jews long time ago. We experienced a very regressive period, you know. I remember in my young age I was debating with friends, you know, we were debating, some were Marxists, some liberals. Now we have to debate Jewish, Muslims or Christian. We have to meet to discuss.
Basic, hasn't it?
I mean, it's so archaic,
it's
so aggressive.
Strange?
Yeah. And Essaouira,
in the name of, and we think we've progressed.
Yeah, we regressed totally. So Essaouira was a kind of place to resist this regression.
So what is it that's special about Essaouira, and how is that reflected in the festival?
It's unique. It's authentic. It's open to all the musicians from, again, the jazz community, the world music community, and the Gnawa are, I don't know why, by miracle or by, I mean, it's, I see it, I listen to it as the real beginning or the roots of the jazz I love. If you listen to the Gambri and you listen also famous jazz man playing on the bass, and it's so close, I mean, it's fascinating.
It's not that it's the source of blues and jazz, but it gives you a sense that you're connecting with one of the roots.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, great musician in the 70s, in the 60s, when Essaouira was at that time the kind of central place for the hippie movement, I mean, there were many, many great big musicians. I mean, you probably heard about Jimi Hendrix, the Living Theater. I mean, so many came here to be inspired by Essaouira. And we need it now more than ever, because those signals of freedom, of dignity, of respect, of just capacity for all of us to sit together. And you know, in Essaouira, you forget religion, you forget passports, you just share emotion and happiness.
One of the fun things about being in a festival like this, the Festival of Essaouira, is to find out about local musicians who aren't well known internationally. And there's one group that has a real buzz about it, and they've got a great name, Blue Mogador.
Yeah.
I'm very delighted that I'm with two members of the band. They're called Marwan and Azdin. So, how would you describe your music, Azdin?
Alors, Bleu Mogadon, moi, c'est la musique Gnawa.
Lou Magador is a Ginawa fusion band. The gambri is the main instrument. We play other instruments too, like the keyboard, the violin, the guitar, the bass, and the drums. We mix their sound together to produce a good Moroccan style.
So the basis of your music is Ginawa. Does that mean that you've grown up playing Ginawa? Is Ginawa your own? Do you consider it your own musical tradition?
Well, it's not in our families. None of our parents play Ginawa. But Essaouira is a small city, and we are all like one family here. So we have been around Ginawa musicians since we were kids. I like the sound of gimbri, and all the young people around here like it.
You've mentioned Ginawa as the basis of your music, but you call it Ginawa fusion. So what are the other elements that you're bringing to this music?
Well, Ginawa fusion is all our idea. I play the gimbri, and we formed a band with the gimbri as the bass. Then we decided to try this experiment of mixing all the instruments together.
Marwan?
Each member of the group has his own ideas, and we all come with suggestions to make during the rehearsals. So really the music kind of creates itself.
Yes, some of us like jazz, so we mix with jazz. Others like reggae, so we do Ginawa reggae fusion. And as anyone can hear, Ginawa is already similar to jazz, or rather to the blues. One of the first instruments I mixed with the gimbri is a violin. That was back in 2004, and I can tell you, nobody back then was mixing gimbri with violin.
Azdin, the name of your group is wonderful. It's very evocative, Blue Mogador. So do you want to tell us why you've chosen this name, Blue Mogador?
Mogador is the old name for Essaouira, and the blue comes from the city's flag and also the blue of the houses, their doors.
Azdin, you're a young group. How important is Ginawa music to young people?
Ginawa music will go on forever. It's like blues and jazz. They share the same history. And just as jazz and blues have grown in importance over time, so Ginawa music will grow too. When it started, the Essaouira festival was playing only traditional Ginawa with only gimbri and castanets. Now they are inviting other musicians to come here to perform with the Ginawas.
Ginawa music really is our blood. Children here first learn how to walk and then they start singing Ginawa. It's a traditional and it's a spiritual music as well. They say Ginawa music can heal people from sickness. And the traditional music, well, it's just fantastic.
Thank you very much, both of you, Azdin and Marwan. Blue Mogador at the Essaouira Festival.
Thank you.
This is the beach outside the old stone walls of Essaouira, and it's a really lively beach. It's a large, sweeping, sandy bay, and it's packed with bathers, including women who are in full length from head to foot costumes, special Muslim costumes. And there are windsurfers, there are people playing beach ball, there are football players. It's got a really buzzing atmosphere. And later on tonight, this same beach is going to be packed with thousands and thousands of people who've come along to see Morocco's most important veteran band, an iconic band that pioneered the idea of bringing local Moroccan styles like Gnawa into popular music. And that was nearly 40 years ago, and they're still one of Morocco's top bands. They're playing tonight at the Festival of Essaouira at the Meditel stage, and we'll be there with Nas El Guiwan.
من هو باز في القفاز يا من هو باز في القفاز ويا من هو في الروج على الكندرة وانشر جناحه يا من هو تليس يا من هو تليس اليام يا بتي مالكي عوجاق واش من سباب عرشتيني بيه ترى تخيني حلي ترى تخيني حجاكي مولاهي وصدق احتى عيا وقالوا راها في تبقى فيه بنادم نبغي وظلوا مثل يبغيني كيف نبغي نقول علي لي بخلاقي ما يخليني فين غادي بيا خويا فين غادي بيا فين غادي بيا خويا فين غادي بيا ماني ستريت يا تاك ما تماني ستريت فين غادي بيا خويا فين غادي بيا والخيل صربا صربا أنا ما نسيت القول ونجمع الطلبة أنا ما نسيت عشيرة يا سمح الرحمة أنا ما نسيت طواري وخيت هادي تلفا فين غادي بيا خويا
الشاني لا مال التربة
همني ويا الشاني
لا صابة لا غمرة
همني ويا الشاني
لا الجملة غمرة
همني ويا الشاني
شمسنا ضوها جمرة
همني ويا الشاني
ويا لعت القدرة
همني ويا الشاني
وخيت هادي نكبة
فين غادي بيا خويا فين غادي بيا فين غادي بيا خويا فين غادي بيا
فين فين غادي بيا خويا فين غادي بيا
فين غادي بيا خويا فين غادي بيا
فين فين غادي بيا خويا فين غادي بيا
فين غادي بيا خويا فين غادي بيا
وما لي ستريت يا تاك ما تماني ستريت بين قلب الوقات فين حيرة وعناد بين قرب والبعاد
يا بين الخيال
بين نار والرماد
وعدا بالولفق
وعدا بالولفق خيط خيط هادي
تلفق
دقات أبعاد قاب يا قبح الرحبة أمان سيد دواري خيط خيط هادي الباب
مين غادي بيا خويا مين غادي بيا مين غادي بيا خويا مين غادي بيا
أفل فين غادي بيا خويا مين غادي بيا
مين غادي بيا خويا مين غادي بيا
أفل فين غادي بيا خويا
مين غادي بيا مين غادي بيا خويا مين غادي
Well, we've just been listening to the music of Morocco's most famous group, Nas El Diwan, a group that's been going for nearly 40 years. And I'm now backstage at the Meditel. There's another group on stage, some very loud percussion, as you can hear. And I'm with the director of Nas El Diwan, one of the founder members, and his name is Omar Essayed. So, Omar, why don't you tell us what Nas El Diwan actually means?
El Diwan, ça veut dire les gens. Nas.
Nas means people. And El Diwan means people of peace, people of love. It's also people of culture, people of pride, and many other things. It's a very old name. Long time ago, El Diwan were people who gathered together to recite poetry and play music, like in a kind of musical salon where many arts are performed.
So, I understand that you were founded in 1970.
That's right. But before founding Nas El Diwan, we were around since 1963. We all worked hard till we started the band in 1970.
Because I understand you're the pioneer group that brought in local Moroccan styles into popular music here.
Actually, that idea came from our forefathers. It came from our culture, because our heritage is very rich here in Morocco. Here we don't have only Gnawa culture. We also have Hamatcha, Drqawa, Aita. We have folk music from the south, from Zagoura. There is also Aqalla and Hawara. There is a lot more, Malhoun, Amazigh music, rhythms from the Sahara. There is so much here. And as for us, we don't use Western instruments in our band. We're not against Western instruments, but we want to preserve our authenticity and our culture.
I mean, what was popular music like in Morocco in the 1960s?
La musique populaire au Maroc, c'est...
Traditional Moroccan music, popular Moroccan music, has always been here. But in the 1960s and 70s, other types of music came in and at first overwhelmed Moroccans. There was Western music and also Middle Eastern music from Cairo. But we were not overwhelmed. We stood our grounds because we are not like other singers. Really, we are actors who sing. We do work as actors in the theater as well.
So, you play the banjo, for example. Why the banjo?
We don't call it banjo here. We call it snitra. Why? Because it's not the same as the Western banjo. It has no frets, so it can play the Arab scale. We took the frets off to play the quarter tones of the Arab scale. A banjo with frets simply cannot play quarter tones.
I imagine at the time when you started, you were hearing music from the Beatles and the Rolling Stones on the one hand, and on the other hand, you were listening to the great singers of Egypt and Lebanon, the popular singers of the Middle East. I wonder if that's reflected in your music.
Maybe this mixture of styles did influence our music a little bit, maybe. But we have our own Moroccan culture. Our real roots are in our own traditional music. Our lyrics are our own too. We have always been quite anti-establishment. We sing against injustice and against corruption. We have songs like Allah Ya Mulana or Fin Ghadi Bina Khuya, which means, where are you taking us, brother? The words are very important to us. Again, it's central to our culture.
This is one of Nas El Gwan's most famous songs, called Anakhla Shama, the Queen Bee Shama. According to Omar Essayed, it's a poem that was suggested to the group in 1985 by King Hassan II himself. In the poem, the Queen Bee Shama is telling a sultan about how wonderful her ministers are, constantly feeding her with honey. The sultan, in contrast, complains about his own ministers, saying they're hiding from him the hideous and sad reality of his kingdom. On the beach, in a midnight concert at the Essaouira Festival of Gnawa and World Music, Nas El Gwan.
شوفي يا شامة ضريفة ناس العدل ولاد المشرف تريكة المختار ربي يحجبهم من مكايد كل من هو غشاش قالت النحلة السلطان طبيب والراعي بضرور ولا وزير يبلغ الخبارة ولا وزير يبلغ الخبارة
وضيت الله
طلوع جعل في قدوة جعل في قدوة
حكمة وتجارة
نغمة التحنان بين البستان يا شامة يا شامة السلطان طبيب والراعي مضرور
والراعي مضرور
بولوزي ما يبلغ الاخبار
band Nas Al Ghiwan performing at a beach concert at the 2009 Gnawa and World Music Festival in Essaouira in Morocco. That programme was first broadcast in World Roots in 2009. The presenter was Lucy Duran and the producer was Roger Short. Well, looking ahead to next week's programme, it follows this year's World Roots Academy protégé, Hari Sivanesan, as he travels to Chennai in the south of India to have his first meeting with his mentor there, the singer Aruna Sairam. That's World Roots at 3 o'clock next Saturday. This is BBC Radio 3. Just coming up to 4 o'clock, time for Jazz Library with Alan Shipton.
Today, Jazz Library focuses on one of the most prolific tenor saxophonists, composers, arrangers and sometime bandleaders in jazz, Al Cohn. And to talk about his career, I'm joined by fellow saxophonist and bandleader, John Altman. John, you knew Al quite well, but what would you say are the special qualities about him as a player that really stand out?
He used his arranger's mentality to play a lot, which quite often people will think, oh, that means he was a cold player, but far from it. He combined the elements of the tenor tradition of Lester Young and Coleman Hawkins with a sort of arranger's ear to the new styles of bebop and sat in that sort of tradition of the Lester Young disciples, but also somewhat outside it and was somewhat revered by the other players of that genre who, I guess one could say, the Stan Getzes, Zoot Sims, Brew Moores, Alan Eagers.
Well, strange you should mention that collection of players, because we're going to start with a track that puts them together and a very different pair of arrangers' ears. This is the piece that Jerry Mulligan wrote for many of the tenorists who had at one stage or another been in the Woody Herman Herd, some original brothers and some not quite so original brothers. And he called it Five Brothers. There isn't actually a baritone in this lineup; it's five tenors. And I think this is quite interesting because Mulligan has somehow got the timbre of that original Woody Herman arrangement, which was by Jimmy Giuffre, but it somehow works as a stage for all these players to show both their similarity and their originality at the same time.
Yes, and I think listening to the Woody Herman band, particularly when Zoot, Al and Stan Getz were all members of the sax section, which is a sort of a mind-boggling thought, really, you can hear the similarities and also already, even in their formative years, the differences that evolved further so that by, say, the mid-70s, you could be in no doubt which one was which. You know, but when they were forging their identities, they certainly hewn from the same cloth.
Well, we're not going to go through all the individual players and their respective contributions to this track, but suffice it to say, it starts with Zoot Sims, it's followed by Stan Getz, under whose name the session was recorded, and it finishes just before George Wallington's piano solo with a contribution from today's subject, Al Cohn. The track is Five Brothers, and it's from the Stan Getz album, The Brothers on Prestige. Stan Getz and his four brothers on the track Five Brothers from the album called The Brothers on Prestige, and that was dubbed from the BBC's rather ancestral vinyl copy, but it's currently available on a Prestige CD in the original Jazz Classics series. The band Stan Getz, Zoot Sims, Al Cohn, Alan Eager and Brew Moore on tenors, with George Wallington piano, Gene Ramey bass and Charlie Perry drums in April 1949. Well, it wasn't long after that, John, that we find Al Cohn actually leading his first session under his own name in July 1950 and recording for Savoy. It's always struck me that this session in some ways sits between that very fluent player that you hear in the Woody Herman and Stan Getz context and that we were to hear later. He's somehow a little bit lumpy in his playing here.
Yes, I mean, there's an interesting dichotomy about Al because he never really thought of his playing as being that good or that interesting and sort of walked away from it to arrange and do other things. Whereas at the same moment, he was held in great reverence by people like Stan Getz and Zoot Sims, who couldn't say enough about him. I remember going to see Stan Getz with Al once at Ronnie Scott's, and he said very mischievously, "Let's go and sit at the front and see how long it is until he panics," which I thought was a wonderful line.
And certainly not something that Stan was given to, really.
No, but he was very intimidated by Al's musicianship. I think also a problem at that particular time was that the drug use prevalent among the musicians was so great at that particular time.
This is back in 1950 when he made this next record.
That it did start taking its toll on people's health. Obviously, in Al's case, it took a very tragic toll because he lost an eye through getting an infection. And that really stopped him from being involved in the drug scene.
Yes, I suppose not everybody had that kind of wake-up call, and I think he transformed himself as an individual after that, didn't he?
Well, totally, and he also was getting a lot of commercial work as an arranger, and that sort of took him off the playing scene more and more over the years. Although he did carry on making records and appearances, he thought of himself much more as an arranger who dabbled in playing the saxophone.
So this is before that turnabout. So he's at this point a player who also dabbles in arranging. And the track we're going to hear is a neo standard called Let's Get Away From It All. And it's from the album that Savoy brought out in 1950 called The Progressive Al Cohn. By Savoy in July 1950. That's the Al Cohn Quartet with Let's Get Away From It All. And that's out on the album The Progressive Al Cohn. We've dubbed that again from a BBC ancestral LP, but it's currently on CD from Savoy. Though I do have to say that the recording quality hasn't improved greatly in the transfer from LP to CD. John, let's pick up what you were saying at the beginning of the programme about the extraordinary arranger's imagination that Al brought to his playing, because there's a very good example of it in one of a set of albums that's just come out again from Avid. This is the Bob Brookmeyer band featuring Al Cohn, and it's part of a Four Classics album set that they've brought out. Open Country is probably the tune that everybody thinks of first when the name Bob Brookmeyer is mentioned. And normally we think of it either in the versions he recorded with Stan Getz or, most famously, with Jerry Mulligan. This is, I think, a lovely version, not least because when Al comes in with his solo, you hear something that's almost as enticing a melody as the original tune.
Yes, and it's the arranger's mentality at work again. And Al had this uncanny ability, really, to always, even at the fastest tempos, think melodically and think, as it were, across the tune rather than through the changes. And unlike many other players, he doesn't just run the chord changes and throw in sort of stock phrases on every change. He's always got a bigger picture in mind, and I'm sure that's the arranger's mentality. In fact, when we had conversations about the techniques of playing, that was something that was always at the forefront of his thoughts, that he was creating melodies and not doing anything brilliantly technical. I mean, his great joke, of course, was, you know, I love playing giant steps, I use my own changes, which was wonderful.
Yeah, very much. I think that the sense of humour that comes out in what we'll hear later on, and there's many, many duets he recorded with Zoot Sims. You've mentioned a couple of times, John, that you knew him quite well. How did that happen? How did you end up being quite matey with him?
Well, in a very curious way, actually. The Concord All-Stars, which was a sort of an ad hoc band that was created in the mid-70s by Carl Jefferson, came to do a couple of dates in London during the summer festival season. And I got this panicked phone call from the promoter saying, would it be OK if I had one of the band billeted on me at home? And I can't remember if I had a choice of people or the name Al Cohn came up immediately, but I got Al and he became my house guest and subsequently was my house guest most times when he came to England. And we developed a sort of a very fun rapport and friendship, and we would listen to music a lot, talk about music a lot, but mainly watch Jack Benny and Phil Silvers and the Marx Brothers, which was much more interesting to him, probably, you know, having the ability to become a stand-up comedian himself. He certainly had that sense of humour. Thank you.